Welcome to the Outthinker Podcast. Each week, we talk with forward-looking strategists and innovators that are challenging the status quo, leading the future of business, and shaping our world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of the Outthinker Strategy Network. I first got to meet Kirsten Ferguson about 3 years ago when COVID hit and we organized the summit. She was one of 20 world-renowned speakers that spoke at the summit and one of the most popular. She's one of Australia's most prominent leadership experts. She started her career at the Royal Australian Air Force as an officer. She graduated from the Air Force Academy at the top of her class. She's been the CEO of Centus, an international consultancy. She is an active board member. She began her career as a board member when she was appointed by the Prime Minister of Australia to be the acting chair of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in 2018. She serves or has served on the boards of Sunwater, Dart Energy. She was the first female director of Queensland's Reds rugby union team. And she's also served on the boards of Simic Group, the Queensland's Theatre Company, Lane Bleachley's Aim for the Stars Foundation. She's also on the board of SCA Property Group, EML Payments, and Heinen Sum Timber. She's conducted award-winning PhD research on leadership and corporate culture. She's been named one of Australia's 100 Women of Influence. She's the only Australian to be listed on Thinkers 50 Radar Group for 2021 as one of 30 emerging thought leaders to watch out for. She is the co-author of the award-winning book, Womenkind, Unlocking the Power of Women Supporting Women, and the upcoming book, Head and Heart, The Art of Modern Leadership, to be published shortly by Penguin Random House. In this episode, she talks to us about why great strategy begins with what she calls reading the room. What her research shows are the 8 key attributes of an effective leader, why being the smartest person in the room can often backfire, and tons of other practical advice for becoming an effective leader. Ladies and gentlemen, Kirsten Ferguson.
Kirsten, thank you so much for being here with us. I've got so much I want to cover, given your diversity of experience and the adventure that has been your life and what you're doing now. But I'd like to jump in first by asking a question I ask all of our guests for us to get you to know a little bit personally, which is, if you could complete the sentence for me, if you really know me, you know that.
That is such a good question because it seems like it's easy to answer, but it's not really. I think the thing that people who know me now know is that over the last 2 years, I've had a complete change from living in cities my whole life to now living on the beach. So as I'm talking to you, I am mere feet from the golden sands of 10 Mile Australian beach with the surf coming in. And it just makes such a difference to how you approach life and work. I've written 2 books sitting here looking at the ocean and love it. So if you know me, you know that living on the beach is pretty important.
That sounds like the dream. So this is a podcast on strategy. You certainly have looked at strategy from the military public sector, from being CEOs, from being on boards. I also ask this question of everyone. I never get the same answer. So whatever answer is right. What's your definition of strategy?
Another great one. So I'm always putting people at the center of all my sort of definitions and things, because whatever you might write on a page is irrelevant without people. So for me, I really think of strategy as being our collective or individual ability to really have a perspective about where we're heading. So I like to think of it in the simplest terms as being able to read a room. Now, it could be a physical room, but in the context of what we're talking about, it's the organization you're in, it's what industry you're operating in, or even the wider world. And so for me, having that ability to read the room of where we're going and think about that and the decisions you need to make to navigate where we're going, that for me is having the ability to have a strategic insight for a modern leader.
Can you just explain that a little bit more? So if we're not talking about actually reading the room, actually reading people, that's a metaphor for what?
Yeah, it's a metaphor for looking at the signals that are happening in your room. And I think if you just bring it down to the simplest sense, when you do walk into a room, you're looking who's there, who's not there, how do I need to adapt to fit into this room? For me, strategy is no different if you're thinking about it for your industry or your organization or for the wider world. You know, what's going on? What am I missing? What's not even in the room that needs to be? It's really trying to think a few steps or many steps ahead and then navigate your way through that.
Got it. Love it. Love it. You've looked at strategy from many different roles and perspectives. What has gotten you interested in strategy?
I think sitting on company boards, you can't help but be fascinated by strategy because that's obviously one of the key roles of being a company director. So I've sat on boards now for more than a decade, and some are multi-billion dollar enterprises, others are smaller private companies, but strategy is central to all of them. And so there's always that interest in where are we heading? What are the few steps ahead that we need to be considering? What haven't we considered? So that's always sparked my interest. But as you said, it's one of many. And my broader interest is really about the individuals who are thinking about those strategies. And strategy is tied up in people and how other people might engage with that vision or strategy you're setting. So I'm fascinated by how we actually bring everyone together to be seeing the same room, if we use that metaphor again.
Yes. Oh, I love that, the way that you've brought forward that metaphor. Because one thing I appreciate about your work, from what I understand, is this idea that it's not just one leader and people executing the strategy, that people are leaders regardless of where they sit, that you can be a role model and be a leader wherever you sit. Can you just talk to us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I really am a firm believer that we're all leaders. Now, that doesn't mean we're all CEOs. Obviously, that would cause chaos. And I think for centuries, we've only thought about leaders as this traditional hierarchical formal leader with a title, with authority and power and privilege. But we look around us, and we saw this during the pandemic. Our families have leaders in them. Our communities have leaders in them. In our organizations, we have informal leaders who can influence change, often more effectively than the CEO with a formal title, because they're the people that others will listen to. So I do think we need to give everyone the credit of believing and understanding that they too impact people through the words they use, the behaviors they role model, or the choices they make. And I think that's central to my work in leadership. But then think, if we've accepted the premise that we're all leaders, what does that look like? And who are the modern leaders that we actually need in the world today? And that's where my work is focused now, and identifying what I think are the head and heart leaders we absolutely need.
Yeah, and that is the title of your new book. Can you just explain why you chose that? What does head mean? What's heart mean? I can imagine, but I'd like to hear what those mean.
That's one of the things I love about head and heart, is it's a metaphor that's been around. You know, the human spirit has used head and heart forever as a metaphor. And who hasn't heard the term, my head says no, but my heart says yes. And we might have been told we've got rocks in our head or experienced heartbreak. So head and heart is just something that's easy for people to grab. It all started because I remember watching Simon Sinek do a TED talk almost a decade ago now. And he mentioned a US Marine captain, Captain Will Swenson, and an incident in Afghanistan. And I ended up doing a really deep dive to understand what this incident was all about. And it's fascinating. For anyone who hasn't done it, go and look at the official narrative and the details of his citation. But for those who don't know, there's a single moment in the Battle of Ganjal in the Afghanistan war, which was captured on a US military pilot's head cam while they were rescuing injured Marines. And the footage is now on YouTube if you want to go and have a look. But one of those injured was a man called Sergeant Kenneth Westbrook. And as he's lowered into the helicopter, you see Captain Will Swenson give him this kiss on the cheek. And it's a really tender, compassionate moment that obviously Swenson would have never expected was going to be captured on camera. He probably didn't even realize there was a head cam on. But in this moment, and leadership for me is just a series of moments, we see someone who is clearly leading with both his head and his heart. He had endless bravery and command and control and all of those things on that day. But he also had huge empathy and humility and courage and self-awareness in that moment. So that sparked this journey of, well, what does head and heart leadership actually look like? And so have been doing research. I'm an adjunct professor at the Queensland University of Technology and have now identified the 8 attributes of leading with the head and the heart. And it's just something that I've become incredibly passionate about and can measure. So you can go and measure now. I've got a scale. It's all free. Go on headheartleader.com and you can see if you're traditionally more of a head or a heart-based leader and those strengths where they lie.
Could you break down those head and heart a little bit further? I think that you have 8 attributes.
So the art of modern leadership, in my mind, is having all of the these. You do need all eight. They are equally important, but the art is knowing what is needed when. So your head-based leadership attributes, and remembering the head is a metaphor. This is just those tangible things we were often rewarded for at school as well, passing exams and things like that. Curiosity is the first one. We obviously need leaders who are curious, not just about some things, but about anything, you know, just being curious about people and about how things work, or understanding you don't have all the answers. The second is wisdom, and wisdom's obviously been around since the Stoics, but for modern leaders, it ties into strategy. It's really being able to see a number of steps ahead, not have all the information, but still being able to make decisions anyway. And that was really seen during COVID. Perspective is, for me, reading the room. And we talked about that a little. And that is, again, being able to understand who's missing from that room, what we need to do to adapt our leadership in the situation that we're in. And capability is linked to a growth mindset. And so that's about not just being capable at whatever it is we do. And I think a lot of leadership theories leave this out, because it's all very well to be a humble leader, but you've still got to be able to do whatever it is you do. So capability is really important, as is building the capability of others and those you lead. So they're the four head-based attributes. That's curiosity, wisdom, perspective, and capability. The four heart-based attributes, and again, you'll know people who are brilliant at these, but if you don't also lead with capability or wisdom, you know, they're not going to help you much. So the first is humility. And, you know, that makes sense. We intuitively know what that means, but it's confident humility. It's that sweet spot where we're not crippled by self-doubt, but we are confident in what we don't know. The second is self-awareness and understanding the impact that we're having on others. Third is courage, and that's speaking up for what you believe in, even in the face of people pressuring you not to. And the fourth is empathy. I think empathy is the most misunderstood. You know, it's not compassion, it's not pity, it's not sympathy. And it's not helpful to have too much empathy. Again, there's a sweet spot where you can really understand the feelings of someone else without taking them on yourself.
What does it look like to have too much empathy?
I think if you've got too much empathy, there's plenty of research that shows, for example, that some people are more likely to support or donate money to a cause when they're told of one child that's in need and you give them the name, as opposed to eight children who are just a number and we don't understand. We tend to go and empathize more with the one that we see a picture of or whatever. Now, that means rationally, that's probably not the best decision for the greater good. We've got eight children on one hand who are now missing out. That's a very basic example of where having too much empathy is an issue. And I'd recommend anyone read Paul Bloom's book, Against Empathy, which really goes into this in a lot of detail. This is why I think empathy is one of the most misunderstood attributes of leaders, because it is really, really important, but too much is an issue. And you can imagine if leaders empathized with someone telling them that they're really upset, we might have friends who tell us a really sad story and we start to feel sad ourselves. That's where empathy as a leader isn't helpful. If you've got staff, you need to be able to remain distant to a point so that you can help them.
I gotcha. So we had Julia Boorstin on this podcast, and she talked about confidence as being something that in the early stage of the strategizing process, you might want to have less confidence because you want to be open to what I don't know. But eventually you have to make a choice, a decision, and have confidence, maybe even more confidence than the data. As you said, you know, we maybe have to make decisions without full information. But it seems like some of these, maybe the pendulum swings.
The pendulum will swing even in the face of one conversation. And this is the art of being a modern leader. So absolutely, I would agree with Julia that you want the humility when you go into a conversation, that you don't know what they're thinking or you're not sure. Any assumptions you've got are not helpful at this point. But by the time the conversation has ended, you need to have used your head to actually have come up with a decision and a strategy and be capable about where things are moving. And I think that's this art of knowing what is needed when. But if you only go into a strategy discussion with your capability, your 30 years of working, being the top of your industry and technically brilliant, but no humility or self-awareness about the impact you being the smartest person in the room has, you will not get the best outcome. And being this whole smartest person in the room is I think, one of the biggest issues for leaders today who feel this need to have all the answers. And all that does is take up space so no one else can. I've coined a phrase that I first thought about when I was a brand new company director called the word to wisdom ratio. And it was because when I began, I would take a long time and a lot of words to perhaps add a little bit of value. And I would watch more experienced leaders around the table say very little, but the words they did say were brilliant and often changed the course of the conversation. So it made me think about this word to wisdom ratio. And I'm always trying to work on it because we all have meetings where you come out of it and think, oh gosh, no one else spoke up. I had to solve it because no one else is speaking. Well, my suggestion is have a look at why no one else is speaking up. And for many leaders, it's because they're filling the space.
Right. They're not creating a gap for other leadership to step in.
Yeah, or asking really good open-ended questions. And, you know, sometimes the smartest person in the room syndrome, they may well be the smartest person in that room, but they don't need to prove it. So being a model leader is thinking, I know where we're going to end up. I've seen this 10 times before, but I'm actually going to use this as an opportunity to ask really good questions so I can help develop the capability of those I'm working with.
Yes. So you began your career in the military, and I'm just curious, how do you think that you have experienced both private, public sectors, military, you know, for profit? How do you think that that shaped you or shaped your view on leadership?
It's really something I've reflected on a lot. So I joined the military when I was just 17, straight out of high school, and went to our academy here, which, unlike in the US, we have an Australian Defence Force Academy and all three services go together, but we do a degree there, and I was an Air Force cadet. It was pretty tough. It was at a time when there was very few women and there was a real culture of silence. So, you know, things happened that were not okay. And that's been the subject of much review in Australia in the 30 years since then. But that culture of silence, of keeping things within the academy, cadets, you know, never wanted to report things. Speaking up was seen as betraying your mates in the Australian language. And so that's something that you have to unlearn because it's obviously completely misguided and it's not leadership at all. And I think it really formed a foundation for me to understand about the power of those cultures and the red flags that come up when you have them, because they create an unhealthy environment where people aren't psychologically safe to speak up. And as leaders, obviously, that's exactly what we do want. That's one aspect of it. On the other side, I was 21 when I was posted to my first squadron, and I was leading people who had been in the Air Force longer than I'd been alive. So it was a tremendous experience in humility, but also having that leadership experience at such a young age. So I've never regretted. I've always looked back and loved my time in the military. And I think it gives you an incredible foundation for leading later on.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I think in a way it can be a meritocracy and allow you to secure leadership opportunities based off of not your tenure, not who you know, but what your capabilities are.
Exactly. And your rank. I think there's also a lot of misunderstandings around military leadership from movies like Platoon and all those images that the military is just yelling and screaming. Whereas I was certainly taught, and I know everyone that I know that's gone through the military, it is all about earning respect. And that those very senior serving non-commissioned officers, as we, the sergeants and others like that, aren't going to follow young 21-year-old officers to their death unless you earn their respect. And so that's a really important lesson for any young leader.
Yes. And I want to point out for people, because many listeners of this podcast are from the United States, I want to make sure that people understand that on a per capita basis, the Australian military's participation in conflict and wars and history, I don't know what the number is, but Australian military has had a significantly higher contribution, like in world wars, for example.
Yeah, I think we have had an outsized contribution for our size. And certainly conflicts like the Vietnam War were an example of that, where we lost a huge number of young men for the size of our population. World War I was another.
Yes, yes. So tell me, what's something that you've changed your mind about?
Do you mean today?
Anything,
whatever. Oh, you know, I'm always changing my mind. And I think that's the sign of someone who's humbly aware that they don't have all the answers. You know, I think I've changed my mind about what's important in leadership. 30 years ago, to me, a leader was, I thought of them as the person in the corner office with the fancy title and the flash-looking car. And, you know, that's absolutely, totally misguided. Remember the movie Working Girl with Sigourney Weaver and Harrison Ford and Melanie Griffith? I loved that movie when I was growing up. It's an 80s movie. It was fantastic. But it celebrated a leader that I now see as the leader, which is Melanie Griffith, who came through as a EA or a secretary, I think, and villainized the corner office person. And I think I look at that movie now, though, in a really different lens, that, you know, there was a clear leader all along, and it was obviously the person without any of the titles. But it also set women up against each other as well. So I'm glad that we're all rethinking the role of leaders in the workplace, and movies like that aren't going to be made again.
So we're recording this on what happens to be my wife's 50th birthday. And at 50, I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. I don't think she does at all, but she's a leader. What strikes me about your experience is how often you have stepped into leadership roles that, based off of your tenure, based off of your gender, would not be ones that people would commonly think like, oh, yes, she is the boss. And other people in those positions might shrink to think, well, I'm not ready. And so I'm wondering, when you are maybe coaching someone who feels like, oh, I'm not ready, what do you tell them? And how did you step up?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And you're sort of touching on the imposter syndrome. But I think this question of how do you step up, at every point in my career, I've had that moment of thinking, am I able to do this? Am I the right person? A few years ago, the Australian Prime Minister appointed me in a very high profile way to become the acting chair and deputy chair of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, like our BBC. It was front page news. And you do have that moment of, okay, this is going to be a very big deal. And am I the right person? And I believed I was, and it did go well. But that's just one example of where there's a bit of sense of service. There's also a bit of sense of someone seeing something in you that they believe that you're the right person. And so you need to trust in them. But I've become much better over the years of ignoring that little voice of questioning, can I do it? And I hear it, not that I'm mad or anything, but, you know, again, the metaphor, you hear the voice and I can sort of kick it to the curb and go, okay, well, I've heard that 1,000 times before. I've got no reason to think I'm going to fail on this particular thing. But it is definitely something to listen for and not to give it too much time.
Yeah, and I think it's probably very helpful to separate that inner voice from who you are.
Yeah, it's separating that inner voice from actually the external action that you then go and do.
Awesome. So I have so many more questions for you, but I know that we're reaching the top of our time. And I've got three or four questions in front of me that I'm supposed to ask. But the question that just comes up for me is, what is the cost, or what's the importance of good leadership? Because what I get from you, your work, is that you're very committed to enabling, activating the leadership potential in everyone. And I get a sense that that somehow could lead to something important for humanity. So why does it matter? Why does leadership matter?
Well, whether you believe it or not, or whether you like it or not, you are already leading. You might be a really bad leader, but you are leading through the words you use, the choices you're making, and the behaviors you're role modeling. And every leader, which is all of us, leave a legacy in every moment. The way we treat someone at the supermarket checkout, the way we engage with the person on the reception desk, you know, just every single moment is an opportunity for us to leave a positive legacy. And I think the more we recognize we are leaders, it's irrelevant what it says on your business card, or if you have a business card, none of that's what matters. It's the impact you're having on those around you. And so if you start to have that frame of mind, that I am a leader, then it starts to make you think, okay, well, what legacy do I want to leave? And I'm hoping we can all leave a nice, smooth wake behind us, not choppy waters for everyone.
Ah, I love that metaphor. Coming back to the beach.
Exactly.
So how can people continue to learn from you? Like if they're curious, for example, of these eight attributes of the head and the heart, and how can people follow you and learn from you?
If they visit headheartleader.com, I'd love you to take the survey that I mentioned, the scale. It's called the Head Heart Leader Scale. Not very creative there, but you can get a free report that shows you your own leadership, how you rate in those eight attributes. You can pre-order a copy of my new book on Book Depository for free delivery to the US. And look, I'm so humbled. Adam Grant has said it's a really timely, actionable book. You'll see him on the front. And Hubert Joly, the former CEO of Best Buy, reckons it's an indispensable companion for every leader. Mm-hmm. So I hope you all grab a copy and enjoy it as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. And if you had to get endorsements or support from anyone that would talk about leadership, Hubert Joly and Adam Grant, they're the
top of my list. I know. I was so humbled. So very grateful and very excited. And I'm also going to be traveling to the US early 23. So look forward to, you know, catching up with as many people as possible.
Well, we look forward to seeing you here and there and all over the world and reading your book and embracing all of our leadership potential through your work.
Thank you for having me and a happy birthday for your wife.
Thank you. I will tell her.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our producers, Karina Reyes and Zach Ness, our editor, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kaihan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week with another episode of Outthinkers.